Renaud, welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Show. Bienvenue is the correct term, right?
Yes, merci. Merci beaucoup.
You're an interesting fellow. You haven't been on the scene for very long, but you've built a couple of really useful websites. The one we're going to go through one of them today. The Bitcoin Portal, I believe it's called, right?
Yes.
But first of all, since you haven't been on before, could you tell our listeners a little about yourself and how you found Bitcoin? And
Sure.
Just whatever you want, what you're working on and so on.
Yeah, sure. So I kind of discovered Bitcoin quite recently. It was in 2023. And of course I knew about it way longer than that. But I always kind of thought it was a little bit of a scam before that. And in 2023 I was kind of maybe more open at that time, and in fact I stumbled upon a video from Matthew Crater, who you had I think in a couple of days ago, and it kind of clicked at that time. Basically I was kind of liking the way he was presenting things, you know, very analytical but also very precise. So I kind of thought, okay, now it's time for me to kind of jump in. And since then I've been very, very focused and interested on Bitcoin and trying to find a way and maybe a niche where I can contribute. So that's the idea. So quite recent, yeah, you know, 2-3 years.
But your background is you're a developer basically, right?
So I started in the telecom industry about 30 years ago, right? So I started at Nokia in late 90s doing some research on telecommunication networks, and so it was 2G, GPRS, 3G at the time, then moving to 4G. And so first I kind of was doing the research, then the solution development, and then I moved to product management in the telco industry until 2023 actually. So I have a lot of background exposure to data analytics and collection and analysis, and I thought it would be interesting to use that background to analyze Bitcoin network. That is also a network. So yeah, basically 12-13 years in product management, and doing some software for telco operators.
All right, and the site you're working on, how long has it been up?
So I started about a year ago to put it up, and it was April last year. And basically at the beginning it was just one page trying to show a few things, collecting data from my own node, and then adding more data source, you know, price, but also other things like nodes, accounts and stuff like that. So I have kind of expanded a bit the scope, and lately I'm trying to evaluate the different, you know, qualities, monetary qualities of Bitcoin, based on the various statistics that we can collect from the network. And I think we can go deeper later in the interview. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are a lot of blockchain analytics sites, course. I think mempool.space is probably the most popular one. But what people don't realize is that they can run these instances themselves. So like your site, is that also like it's data from your node? Is that correct? Or can you, is it open sourced so you can connect it to your own node and they use that data, or how does it work?
Yeah, my site is collecting data from my own node, but I know there are other ways, right, to collect data from the Bitcoin network, and I think it's right that you could actually query mempool.space probably. I think they have some APIs that you can use, but yeah, I'm using my own node at the moment, and it's not, my site is not yet open source, But this is something I'm thinking about. I would like to have it, you know, very kind of ready before I go there. So if it's still kind of in construction, it's a bit early, maybe. Yeah.
Not to bash mempool.space too much here, but I prefer mempool.guide, which has the shit icon for crap data instead of playing these games and calling them whatever the spammers want to call them, like BRC20 tokens and
yes,
because like many of these projects, they're funded by grants, and when you get funded by grants, sometimes you want to appease the people giving you the grant. And I suspect that something like that has happened to mempool.space, who used to have the little turd icon for all arbitrary data, but now it's sort of legitimizing the thing. So if you don't want that, but still don't want the hassle of connecting it to your own node, you can go to mempool.guide instead, which I view as better.
Yeah, I'm using it actually also on my site, on mempool.guide. So when you drill down to a certain block, you go there. Yeah.
Yeah. Having said that, I love the mempool.space site. Like, it's very, very useful and very well presented. I use it a lot, especially for fee estimations. I prefer to estimate the fee myself most of the time and not use default settings in wallets. Anyway, this is not an interview about that site, so it's about your site. So what's you're collecting data? What's the main point of the site? What kind of information do you want to convey to people?
Yeah, so basically, I kind of during this V30 core V30 debate, it was then a lot about the spam, right? Spam on the blockchain, and even the justification for V30 was that, anyway, there is, already plenty of spam, and it's better to, to open up this SOP return so that spammer can use it, and then it's less harmful for the for the chain, right? That one of the justification. But the thing is that there was not really a data shown to back this up. So I thought, okay, now maybe it's time to kind of try to see what's going on in the blockchain. What is the level of spam? What is the percentage of spam versus financial transactions? What are the different ways the spammers are adding data? So you have the ordinals, you have the op return runes, but these ones, they are typically below a certain size, right? Below 80 bytes, for instance. And then you have the large op return. So different type of spam going on. And I thought, okay, probably good to start having some visibility on that. So that's what I started to add. And then it's kind of expanded to also other things. So what I try to do is really to show the status of the network in terms of spam, but also other indicators like, mining, concentration, things that you can also find in other sites like mempool.guide as well. But I thought, okay, having everything in one under one place umbrella would actually help. And then I expanded that further. So I thought, okay, why don't I try to kind of characterize and give a kind of score for the Bitcoin monetary, health. And using, of course, the underlying network indicators, trying to derive a certain state health of the network. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, is that a percentage of health, or like how do you present that?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's a percentage. It's a score between 0 to 100. And of course, it's subjective. So you need to kind of use a certain formula to arrive to that score. But the thing is that it's kind of open. So I'm presenting the methodology. And what is more important than the actual score is the direction it takes, right? So So now, for instance, it's saying like we had 57 for security and 52 for decentralization. But what's more interesting is the direction that it takes. So we can look at the, you know, the evolution across months and years to see where we are going, basically. That's the idea.
Oh, that's a very neat idea. I bet in the future people will measure the health of the network in Renaults. So like, yeah, we're running at 97 Renaults per block here. And that's pretty good.
But the good thing, the good thing is that always those cores, they kind of reveal underneath the, you know, the actual indicator. So the percentage of spam, the moment we had 45% of spam in the blockchain, the amount of large op return, the top mining pools. So now, like Matthew said in your interview, I think top five mining pools, they collect gather more than 90% of the hash rates. So this is these kind of indicators are always shown, and then I derive a score.
Yeah, and a point that a lot of people miss is that the more decentralized mining is, the more the filters work. So the mempool filters only work if Bitcoin is functioning as it intended with decentralized mining, which is sort of coming back with this hash renting thing to a certain extent, at least. So I hope that's where we're going directionally, even if it's going to take a while to solve the problem completely. Who knows?
I think it's really... it's really a revolution, this hash renting, because the scale is totally different. So if you want, before that, if you wanted to kind of, and I've done that, you know, rent a miner, you know, it's maybe you hash at 120 terahash, but with the mining, you can go much higher. The kind of beta hash that you can have.
Yeah, bit access and whatnot are very neat, but this is a whole different level. It's the equivalent of thousands of bit access running in your home, and you don't have to listen to the fans blowing all day. So it's very neat. I mean, enabled by Datum and Ocean, in a sense that you can become a miner rather than just a hashmonger.
Exactly.
Because I love that distinction, because if you don't know what block you're mining on, you cannot really call yourself a miner in any sense. You're just a hasher. But we're going to try something here that we don't usually try on this show, but I think it'll work. And that is, why don't you just start showing us the site and walk us through it and what information you can find there and what you can use it for.
That's great. Let me share my screen.
Hello there, folks. You have now reached the part of the episode where I read you the ads, where I show you products from our sponsors, because we like the products our sponsors provide and or they've given us a bunch of money. First off, firefish.io. The open marketplace for Bitcoin backed loans. You should check that out, because that is where you can use your stupid KYC stack to use as collateral to get a fiat loan for your Bitcoins, so you don't have to pay taxes on it because you got a KYC stack. Also, bitbox.swiss, check out the new Nova edition, a great hardware wallet. Check out the Bitcoin Advisor for Bitcoin inheritance planning, and also check out the Bull Bitcoin wallet and exchange. Bull Bitcoin has been a base company for a long time, so you should definitely check them out and use code Infinity anywhere on the internet, because code Infinity would get you a discount. So firefish.io, bitfox.swiss, bitcoinadvisor.com, that's with an ER, and also the Bull Bitcoin wallet. Don't forget to brush your teeth.
Use it?
I do, yes.
Yeah. Very good. So basically, it's a completely renewed. I launched the new version on Monday. Basically, the landing page is kind of explaining the concept, you know, what we are trying to do here. And The idea is that we score the Bitcoin monetary health with two indicators, decentralization and security. This idea is coming from Jeff Booth.
Yeah. Who
I think everybody knows that, you know, he has repeated many times that if Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, then it's going to be fine, right?
It's called the blockchain trilemma, I believe. And I think Jeff has popularized it for sure, but I think it was around even before Jeff, if I'm not wrong here. But it basically says that a blockchain can only do two out of three, and that is decentralization, security, and scaling is the third one, right? And so this is why Bitcoin has to scale via layer twos, because you cannot scale on-chain without compromising decentralization and security, which are very much two sides of the same coin. If it's not decentralized, it isn't secure. And if it isn't secured, what's the point?
Yes. So, that first page basically explained the concept of the also shows here the different dimensions that that I'm using to score the Bitcoin health. So we have the mining, the first dimension, very important, of course. Then we have the block space. And I will go to the details maybe after that. But we have block space, then governance. There's been a lot of talk on the governance in the Bitcoin core. Something I thought would be good to look into and maybe gather objective indicators. Really, that's really the idea here, to gather indicators that that are out there that you can really collect. Then we have the node. Yeah, go ahead.
Number of different types of implementations be a scoring thing there in the governance
piece
of the pie?
Yes, also in the nodes, but also in the governance, exactly. And the governance, I'm developing the model now, but the idea would be really to actually to go to the GitHub and see and collect what's can be collected objectively. You know, the number of NACs, these things like that are objective metrics, and then derive a score. And also it will include, the process, what is followed when launching a new version, the quality, the quality criteria and so on. But it's under construction. We have student, that's, I think, is going to be a kind of a tough one, of course, quite controversial. But again, I will just collect the things that are objective here.
This is super interesting. It says 3 out of 7 dimensions live. I guess the dimensions are the pieces of the pie chart there.
Exactly. And maybe I can go to those directly if you want.
When I see this, I get excited because I have so many opinions about this and that. Fungibility, for instance, is super hard to measure, I guess, because it's in the eye of the beholder to a large extent.
Yes.
Adoption, does it mean? Do you count hodling as adoption? I guess not, but it's sort of transactions per time unit metric is a very Keynesian notion in my opinion, and it doesn't really say much. Institutional is interesting too. Do we really want that?
Yes, that's the question here, because it's it's two-sided. If Bitcoin is going to succeed, for sure institutions are joining, but it's also a risk if they start to get too many of those, too many Bitcoin. So it's something that, we'll try to balance the view here as well. And there is still a work to be done here.
Yeah, institutional, I think the divider is is it institutional on a Bitcoin standard or is it institutional on a dollar standard? Because the latter is not necessarily good for Bitcoin.
Yes. Definitely. Fully agree.
So sure, the methodology, I guess that's what you want to dive into next year.
Maybe let's go first to the actual dimension. So it's a bit more kind of glee. So here you see the different dimensions here that are live. So we have the mining health with those cores, you know. Security, highly secure because we have a lot of hash rate at the moment, and it's still going up. While I mean, in the last 6 months, it's kind of stable, but otherwise, it has been really going up a lot. In terms of decentralization, as discussed, we have kind of an issue here, and we can even go deeper. So to get really the details, and this is the different indicators that are collected, you know, directly from the blockchain. So we have the hash rate. We have the hash rate stability as well that we are using to score. Then we have the hardware concentration. This is something that is not often discussed, but it's a big, I would say, pain point in Bitcoin that you have only two main hardware vendor, and they are both Chinese, right?
Yeah, so this is the 82%. Is that how big of a share Bitmain has in the hardware manufacturing?
Exactly. Bitmain and the other one. So they are.
What's the other one?
It's MicroBT.
Okay.
Yes. So together they collect 82% of the hardware or they sell. And I do know that's a security concern, of course, if they start to, you know, to misbehave.
Which they may already have done in the past. There's a lot of, maybe I'd call them suspicions rather than conspiracy theories. There are some things pointing to that the Bitmain devices have been doing shady things on the hardware level in the past, like ASIC Boost being the most obvious one, which is a patent they had that gave them a head start. So that's why they were against the whole SegWit upgrade, right? But let's not get into that. We'll go on here.
Exactly, but that's, you know, it scores only 6 here. Then we have the top one pool share. That's Foundry at the moment.
Wait. Sorry, ADD brain here. But 6 out of 100, what does that mean?
It's the score, right? Well, so we try to score all these indicators between 0 to 100.
Okay.
And this one is scoring very low.
So it has 82% concentration means 6 Renaults in a yeah, how good is this score? Okay,
exactly.
I get it.
Exactly. And again, this is it's just a formula that I'm using, but again, the more important is the direction. So if in 6 months you see 10, then you know that okay, things have been going better.
Right.
Then we have the top one pool share Foundry. 30%, 31%. And what we say here is that it's okay. It's not that bad. But what is bad is the top 5 pool shares. So that only a handful of miners. We say pool, but they're actually the miners here. Right? They decide the template and all things. And the signaling for BIP110, for instance. So it's quite a big. And that one is showing the official number, but the unofficial is worse than that because you have this so-called unpool and friends. Mm-hmm. Basically, all the other pools that are kind of attached to one pool and are doing exactly the same thing. So it's much higher. But anyway, it's going very low. Then one thing, yeah?
Just to dive a little deeper here. So the ant pool and friends, that means that they have the same owner. And in that case, the incentive structure around Bitcoin is still pretty secure, but less secure than it would have been if mining had been more decentralized, because they can do some shady stuff. But in doing so, they're also shooting themselves in the foot, because no miner wants Bitcoin to stop functioning at all. So I think there's like But it does create, you know, targets for people who want to destroy Bitcoin to point a gun at and force to do reckless shit. So of course it's not good. We want the incentive structures to be more solid than just I don't want to shoot myself in the foot.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think that one of those unpool friends is Brains. I think they are joined that group. Yeah,
but to play the devil's advocate, there, Brains is also the pool that is one of the pools that is offering rental hash. Yeah,
that's true. That's a good point. I agree. And so that, you know, when you look at that, you say it's pretty bleak. But the fact is that in Bitcoin, it's really easy to switch, as you suggested here. So, you know, the structural score, structural situation is maybe not great. But then the fact that a miner or a hasher can switch very easily to another pool is a kind of advantage of Bitcoin. So this is also taken into account. We have alternatives, and one obvious is of course Ocean. But you know, if one of those miner pool miners, like Unpool, they start to misbehave, then you would see quite quickly a migration from them to other pools. So here we have a high score, that kind of balancing, right? And that's something that's specific to Bitcoin, because there are many other industries where you are kind of it's much more difficult to change once you have selected your provider. Then we have other indicators here, neutral pool share. So kind of these are the ones that are not in the 90%. Yeah.
What do you mean by a neutral pool?
Yeah, it's basically the one that are, you know, not the big. The big one that we know, but the ones that are doing a little bit alternative type of operation. Yeah.
Yeah, yes. So basically where you can create your own block templates exactly. And stuff like that.
Oh. Exactly, yes. And then two more indicators here. So migration evidence. So we have this pool alternative is good, but then is there evidence that this can really happen? And we have some evidence from the history that this has happened. So that's something that we also measure. And the last one is kind of to really close the loop. So kind of how easy you can switch from pool to pool. Yeah. So these are the kind of different indicators that I'm using, and they provide in the end. So each of them is either going to the security or the decentralization. Sometimes they go to both, but in this case, it's just one or the other. And at the end, we have this these two scores for the mining. So 57 on the decentralization and 80, so quite high for the security.
So given this data, the biggest problem in Bitcoin is miner centralization and miner hardware centralization in particular, then, according to this, I guess.
Exactly. While the hardware concentration is you know, scored on the security, but yeah, you're right. So that's one of those, and maybe let's go to the other one. So I think it's quite related to the ongoing debate, you know, that we have on PAM. So this is the other dimension here, block space health, and again we measure these two, decentralization and security. And what I'm using here is really objectively it doesn't show very well, but this is the percentage of non-financial data or spam that you get on the block on average. So at the moment we have 45.5% of spam in each and every block. And this is the last 90 days. I should add it here, but 45% of spam in the last 90 days as measured on my node.
And here also direction is the most important thing, right? Whether it's increasing or decreasing.
Exactly.
Where would you say that the figure would go from yellow to red? Is that 50% or what?
Yeah, I have a threshold. I don't remember now, but yeah, it's something like 60, 65 would be very concerning. Yeah. So here, the score is very straightforward. So it's the 54, mean 54% of financial transaction. No, it's not transaction. It's the actual space used by the traffic or by the transaction. Then we have the UTXO set. This is another one that, spam, it's also bloating the UTXO set. That's something that we measure here. Somewhat less critical because also it has been going slightly down in the last couple of years, actually. So the direction here is more encouraging than for the previous one. We have also the trend for the growth that is also captured here. And then the last one is the...
Sorry for interrupting, but what does that times 1.0012 mean?
It's a trend. It's really the trend. So it's kind of going up, but very, very slowly, right? 1.0012.
So does that mean that they within 90 days, an average block gets 1.0012 times bigger? Or what does the actual figure mean?
It's the UTXO set. So it's basically exactly. So over 90 days, you have a growth of 1.0012, which is very little, right? But
it's the increase to the entire thing. Okay.
Yes. The last one, most related to the V30. So I also measure the op return, and basically here, how many large op returns there has been in the last. I think this one is the last. Here, saying in the last 30 days, we had 18 large op returns. And typically, those are mined by Marathon, Spider Pool, also F2 Pool. But lately, actually, just last week, Foundry started also to mine those large op return. So by large, we mean above 80 byte, but what I'm actually counting, I'm counting only those that are larger than 1 kilobyte. So, but you can have very different size here. Maybe some are about 1 kilobyte, some are about 100 kilobytes. So,
and what's usually in those? What is the shit data? Is it pictures or moving pictures or what?
It can be anything, right? But I think so far they are kind of neutral, I would say, not kind of problematic. I think yesterday I saw one mined by Mara, and it seemed to be the white paper that was the Bitcoin white paper that was included there. Because it was saying PDF. Actually, we can even go there. I can show you. You can get it. You can drill down here, get more details, and let's see what Mara was mining. So that's the one, right? And then we go to mempool. And we see the large operator, and that's the one.
Okay.
And then we go there and we see white paper, Bitcoin white paper, and then PDF. So likely the Bitcoin white paper. But anyway, that's not something I'm going to dig too much because that can be we don't know what there is there, but from the mempool.guide we can have an idea.
Yeah, it's ironic that the white paper is included like yeah. that, spamming the chain, because yes. why not just a hash of it? Very ironic that putting the white paper actually makes Bitcoin a teeny tiny bit worse as a medium exchange over time. The irony of that is just mind-boggling yeah. that someone would do that.
Yes, I fully agree. And there has been, you know, some campaigns, some waves of you know, spam on the pre-turn. Was it in April, March, April, I think this year? And there was some kind of text. It was text, you know, bragging about, you know, we are spamming now. So it's kind of...
Yeah. Shitcoinery, I'd call it.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, we have those dimension, and the last one that is live is the nodes. This one is quite straightforward, simple, and I'm using by the way Luke Dashier site there to collect the data. I used to go to bitnode.io, but now it's the site is kind of shut down. I don't know why. So, but anyway, we have very good data also from Luke site. So total number of nodes, and then implementation diversity. So this is 74% of core various versions. And then we have different score here. So here I'm saying it's pretty good, or it's actually very good. We have 100,000, close to 100,000 nodes. Probably enough, you know, to have a centralization on the Bitcoin network. But okay, I'm pretty sure some would say, no, that's not enough. We would need 1 million. But okay, you know, you need to kind of decide. And again, the direction is the more important here. However, on the you know, diversity of implementation here, I'm scoring quite low, because this is definitely the 74 risk is really just for core risk is really kind of not so good, I would say. Yeah.
Some people would argue that that is a good thing, though, if which would somewhat be true if that was implementation was all good and people didn't have any objections to that implementation, but I think it's very healthy for the network to now get several implementations like developed and introduced. At the end of the day, like, the Bitcoin is first and foremost dependent on people voluntarily choosing what software to run and what hardware to buy. Like, that's even a layer deeper than proof of work.
Yes, for sure. Yes. Okay, so that's about the site, and maybe one last view on the live. So here, if you want to see the latest what is happening on the network, you get most of the interesting metrics here. So
one of those boxes say knots, and it's green, like knots adoption is going up. Is that like, is the site neutral in that sense, or does it just view knots as a good thing in general? Oh, like, well,
good question. It's totally neutral, so it's just reflecting that it's plus
zero. Okay.
So more diversity, basically.
Yeah, because knots is the second largest implementation.
Oh. Correct. And then you have the alerts, you know, last yesterday we had the larger pre-turn and so on. And if you want more details, you can go to those boxes that are actually pointing to the page of the previous that we had in the previous sites. So all the details, all the detailed metrics, they are here.
Nice.
Yeah. So here it's really block by block, how much of a spam you have, you know. Yeah, so that's where we are with the Bitcoin portal. And in addition, yeah, I'm trying to write every week or a bit less nowadays, but, you know, the latest. So I also have this newsletter where I can kind of expose the latest information that I can see from the blockchain related to spam, related to, well.
So, about BIP110 there, the adoption of BIP110, is there any way to see those metrics, like how that's going?
Yes, it's here. So here it says zero block, right? So that's a little bit the pain point at the moment. But
so that's within a 24-hour period and not a 90-day period.
It is. So you can go. You can go here, I believe, and then you have the BIP 110. And you see, it's we are, and again, this is coming from Luke page. So 8.16% of the nodes, are basically running a BIP 110 at the moment, and I think it's growing. And the latest news on the nodes, I think you know, of course, but I think nowadays the BIP 110 is integrated directly to the nodes. So
I'm not sure if that's already out or not.
I think it is, and it's the latest nodes version that's been out there for a week or so, maybe 2 weeks.
So if you run the latest version of Knots, you will automatically be signaling for BIP 110. And another thing I learned is that you have to signal for, as a miner, you have to signal for it. You can't just tweak your filters to only allow compatible transactions. You need to actually signal for it for the block to be valid.
Correct. That's true. By the way, are you mining? Are you renting?
No, not at the moment. I've been focusing on other things. I was mining over the winter, but I haven't done the whole hash renting thing yet. I'm embarrassed to say. I've had a little too much else on my plate. So,
Same here. I'm really going to do it, but I didn't find the time yet.
So if you scroll down there to the, what do we have? Signaling trend. That's the miner signaling, right?
So you that's the miner signaling. And exactly. So at the moment, but we had, two miners signaling, right? We have, Barefoot.
Yeah.
And then
Bob Burnett.
Mm. Yes. Bob Burnett. And then another one, I think Alberta. Or 234 Alberta, something.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. The guy from Alberta there. Yeah. That's super cool. Alberta independence in action.
Yes, right. So yeah, so that's what we have here. You have some kind of latest news, what has happened on those different dimension. Yeah,
so very nice site. I'm looking forward to seeing how it develops coming months here. Maybe we could stop the screen share now if you've shown all the things.
Yes, stop sharing.
So what's your prediction for the future here? How do you think the whole BIP 110 thing plays out? Like, and what's your best guess of what will happen in August?
Yes, I think it's there are different things. What I wanted to say, and what I wrote also in my newsletter, is that BIP 110, you have to see it also as an ID, right? So BIP 110 is an ID, is a kind of, but I say it's a statement, and the statement is we don't want, or we reject, the large file use case on Bitcoin, and that's BIP 110, and that's an ID, and then that ID has been implemented, and now we have the software. And the nodes, so node runners can, if they want, run that software. So we have it. And what I think is that this ID is not going to disappear. It's not going anywhere. And there are more and more people who want to follow that ID and to kind of also express that ID with their nodes. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing, what happens in August? Well, you know, BIP 110 will activate. And that's what it means is that all the nodes that run BIP 110 are going to reject blocks that are not conformant to BIP 110, meaning that have spam in them. So it could be that a miner is not signaling for BIP 110, not really supporting, but not adding spam to the block. So that block would go through, you know, to those nodes.
Really? Because that's the thing I heard that you need to signal to for the block to go through, but that's not true then?
I think if the block is kind of you know, in line with BIP 110 rules, it should go in, I would say.
Yeah, that's sounds like that would work. But I heard from someone, I can't remember who, that is not the case, that you need to signal.
Let me verify that. But anyway, so that, you know, then if you have a block that is not IP110 aligned, then it will be rejected by those nodes. So the question is, and I think this Luc Dashier is kind of expressing this quite well. The question is, how much miners will want to support spam? And that's really the question here. Do they have a strong opinion that spam is a must, is needed, and especially the large file spam, right? Because there is plenty of spam, or so-called spam, that BIP110 is not targeting. So you have this small op return, all the runes they will go through, like they do today. So the question is, will the miner in a position and make the statement that they want, they support spam on Bitcoin? Or will they say, okay, we don't have a strong opinion, maybe it's better that, you know, we go along here. And I mean, logically, I would say they would go to the second option, and they will decide to go along, so that we will activate smoothly with no chain split, and then we continue from there. That's my best guess. But you know, there are a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of incentives that we don't know about, so that makes things more difficult to predict.
Yeah, I've heard that around 10% of the nodes need to signal for this, for it to make sense for the miners to give a shit about it, basically. Okay. Because if it's smaller than that, it's not really going to change anything. But I don't know the deeper technicalities of it. You can like, subscribe, brush your teeth, and call me an idiot in the comments below if you want. I enjoy that. And educate me on these topics if you'd like to do so. There's a theory that if a non-compliant block is mined, and then the miners just choose to keep on mining on that chain instead of switching to the other, as they should, then the whole thing is a nothing burger, because all that will happen is that we that are signaling for it will just not be on the largest chain anymore. I'm bad at explaining this stuff, but what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that would be the challenge if, you know, if we have a chain split, and then the BIP110 chain is having a small hash rate. It means you mine a block, not every 10 minutes, but much, much longer than that, right? So then you have new blocks every day, or depending how much hash rate you have.
So and then it'll take a long time for difficulty to just to, exactly. to back to 10 minutes also. I mean, that's what happened when Bitcoin Cash forked off. They had to manually adjust the difficulty adjustment.
Yes,
and in doing so, proving that they were not decentralized at all. Proving that they weren't Bitcoin. So I found that ironic. So I certainly hope that this doesn't happen with BIP110, because it's not a hard fork.
No.
Yeah, and there's no. I mean, if you don't want a hard fork, you should just, and you're a miner, you should just signal for it and run it, because that won't affect anyone in any negative way except certain spammers.
Yes, exactly. But again, regardless of what happens, and I think I'm optimist on this one. You know, the ID and the need and the desire for a spam-free or spam-mitigated Bitcoin is not going to disappear. It's not going to go anywhere. How do you kill that ID, really? Well, that's really the question.
Yeah, and also come August, there's a theory that there's no real advantage to being the first miner to signal for it. But once one big miner starts to signal for it, or a couple of them, then it will sort of snowball, because all of a sudden it makes a lot of sense to signal for it. Whereas when no one's signaling for it, it makes less sense.
Yes, exactly. I think that's also explained a lot because, you know, this, especially the big one like Foundry, you know, they kind of probably they take their decision. They take really time to make their decision, right? So it could be that they are still evaluating and they target to decide end of this quarter and then implement next quarter. Let's see.
But yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. It's this, or then they really have a stronger desire for spam. So,
yeah. So, what will be the, so given that you're a fiat-minded, high time preference bullshit miner, so what's the trade-off for an actor such as what's it called, Parasite Pool? The trade-off is risk losing all the blocks, and the reward you get for that is the extra fees collected from the spam, which is minuscule in comparison to the block reward, right? So the fee part of the block subsidy is much small, or the fee part that comes from spam is much smaller. So that's why it wouldn't make sense to them to risk losing the blocks.
Yeah, it's the fee part from spam is way less than 1% of the revenue.
Yeah,
it's like zero something, 0.1 or
0.235 or something like that. I've heard estimates, but it's still super small, so it would make no sense to keep on doing that. However, there might be ways we don't see, like if they get a briefcase full of dollars under the table for doing this stuff, and it's a nation state attack or something. Like, there might be unseen variables here. Who knows? But yeah, what can we do except wait and run our nodes and rent the hash power and see what happens?
Yes, exactly. But did you say that 10% of the nodes? Or is it 10% of the miner that should signal for it to make sense? Or
I think it's 10% of the nodes.
Because I mean, it's we are very close, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, most likely will be much higher than that in August.
Especially if it's mandatory for all knots nodes to do it, then it should be around 20%. So we should be far beyond the threshold. Of course, all of this is theoretical. Like Bitcoin, well, the way I see it, Bitcoin is something to be studied rather than having opinions about. Yeah. Like from a certain perspective, we'll just have to wait and see how reality plays out.
It's so complex, so many moving parts.
Yeah. It's super simple. The basic idea is super simple. Like money with a finite supply. Well, and it's information. So you keep the key in your head, and that's it. But the how that works under the hood, it's quite quickly gets quite complicated, and no one really knows. I don't think a single person knows how it actually works in reality, because it's not only theoretical, but it's entirely dependent on what software and hardware people choose to buy and run. So that's what makes it so hard to predict future events in it. Yeah, awesome. What else? Is there another topic that we haven't covered that you would like to get into?
No, I think that was really good. Yeah, I think everybody's focused on BIP110, right? That's the big thing. So.
Yeah, and I'm
exciting times.
Very exciting times, and I'm happy to see that my episode with Matthew Crater is getting such attention. It's great to see. So, is there anywhere else on the web where you would like to point people to, or what's your?
Yeah, so the Bitcoin portal, and then from there, anywhere you can find the newsletter. But I am on Substack as well, and then I have a X account.
Yeah, are you on Noster too?
Yes, but I don't post often enough. I forget, but yeah, I'm there though.
Same here. I see it as a lifeboat.
Yes.
More than anything, at this point anyway. I hope it takes off better, but yeah. So go follow Renaud and go check out the Bitcoin portal. Go rent some hash if you want to do that. It's going to be exciting times up ahead. Something is happening in Bitcoin. Bitcoin's immune system is reacting to something that it thinks is a virus. We'll see how much damage the virus does and if the immune system is able to direct the virus somewhere else, preferably to Ethereum. What can we do except sit back and enjoy our popcorn?
Yes.
Anyway, thank you very much for this conversation, Renaud, and I wish you the best of luck in the future. Are you going to any of the conferences this year?
Yeah, I was planning to go to Helsinki ETC conference.
Fantastic. That's
I'll most likely be there. Yes.
So we can... But not to Prague?
No. Not this time.
All right. So yet another reason to come to Helsinki. Use code INFINITY for a discount, of course. And in Helsinki, you will definitely get to meet me and Luke because this is our conference alongside a bunch of other great Finnish Bitcoiners. It's the second year we do it now and in a bigger venue, and it's going to be a great event. I just know it. Hand-picking speakers is something else. It's absolutely love that event. Use code INFINITY for that and for all other conferences as well. But just try it. And Helsinki is also going to be interesting for the reason that we will know what happened to BIP 110 at that point, in all likelihood.
Well,
so that's going to be very exciting. Yeah, looking forward to it a lot. And to everything else.
Yes.
But anyway, this has been the Bitcoin Infinity Show.
Yes.
Like, subscribe, brush your teeth, rent some hash, and go follow Renaud on social media and check out thebitcoinportal.com. See you in the next one.
See you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.